Guitarathon is the greatest guitar sale on earth, and it's happening now. Get massive savings on a huge selection of electric and acoustic guitars, basses, amps, pedals, and other accessories. Get select Ernie Ball strings, 3 for $10. Save $100 on a Fender Special Edition Strat, or get a Yamaha acoustic for just $199. Plus, get special financing on select major brands. Don't miss these incredible deals. Available online and in-store, now through November 1st. Guitarathon, only at Guitar Center. Find your sound.
Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison, here to tell you GEICO has more than just great savings. Much more. Yes, while GEICO could help you rack up more moolah faster than you can say metamorphosis, they've also been the fastest growing auto insurer for more than 10 years. That's more like it. Furthermore, GEICO has fast and friendly claim service. That might seem like an oxymoron, but it's not. All the more reason to say no other auto insurer has more than GEICO. GEICO. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Locked On Cavaliers. As always, I'm Chris Manning, your host from Through the Sword and the Step Back. And holy crap, the Cleveland Cavaliers just beat the Washington Wizards in overtime without LeBron James playing the last 4 minutes plus, 140 to 135. In, I think, a game that, at least in the moment of recording this, not too long after the final buzzer, I think that was a more exciting game than Christmas Day. I know the Christmas Day had the stakes, the theatrics of the Cavs playing the Warriors and all of that, but my God, this game had everything. And joining me today, kind of on a whim here, is a friend of the pod to shout out the Pod Save America folks. It's my buddy from OSU. He writes for the Lantern and some other places down in Columbus. It's Kevin Stankiewicz, who actually back in the day was a blogger with me at Fansided Cavs site. Kevin, how are you doing? And two, how did you feel watching that game?
Well, I'm doing much better now that the game is over and my heart rate has returned to normal. I mean, it was, as you mentioned, with like the Christmas Day, it was certainly had you on the edge of your seat. I was almost hoping for more basketball, as weird as that sounds. It was just, there were so many turns that I would not have been upset if the game had gone into double overtime. It seemed unthinkable after unthinkable play continued to happen down the stretch there, and I mean, it obviously had the feeling of something bigger than a regular season game for sure down the stretch.
Yeah, this game I think had everything. So you had the Cavs, I think, sort of struggle to start the game in some ways. You saw Washington have some success pushing the ball up the floor, which we've talked about on the show. The Cavs have a bad transition defense. Then this third quarter, the Cavs have to go on that absurd run with Kevin Love scoring 15 points in that quarter, which, and on a normal night, that would have been the most absurd thing about a game, right? Is Kevin Love having this big quarter and him having this big game on the same day as these Carmelo Anthony trade rumors come up. And then, you know, this is with Kyrie Irving playing really badly. This is with everything that's happening. And just a crazy, crazy day. Just a crazy, crazy game. And then you get to the fourth quarter. LeBron James has this absurd fourth quarter. He has an overall just an absurd game, a career high 17 assists. He's in some foul trouble. And then Kevin, he misses that bunny of a layup.
Oh, well,
when that happens, I mean, if you have something to say too, just say it, but like, what goes through your mind when that happens?
Well, at first, he, of course, you know, walked a mile before he released the shot. So my initial thought was, oh my gosh.
Pod, yeah, friend of the pod, Dave Zirin, tweets that he took 67 steps. He's not wrong.
Yeah, I see him make the dribble. I'm like, what is this, the crab dribble, you know, bringing that back? He clearly travels. So I'm thinking, no whistle. How did they not call it? Then, of course, the ball hangs up there on the rim and falls off. And I'm thinking at that point, you know, basketball gods, ball don't lie. You know, he deserved to miss it after getting away with the travel. And so I was like, well, you know what? That's just the way it is. LeBron clearly was mystified. You could just see the look on his face. Like, he didn't even know what just happened. And of course he answers that with the most ridiculous shot I think I've seen outside of a playground in a long time.
That shot, only LeBron. Like, honestly, I know, like, Curry and stuff can make that, but, like, that just feels like one of those shots that only LeBron James is pulling that off. Like,
well, yeah, just with the way that he, you know, had to catch the ball off the pass from Love, which we can get to in a sec, but just the strength that it has to be falling out of bounds and the manner in which he's, you know, catches the pass, has to retreat to the three-point line, it definitely did have the feeling of a, you know, a play that only LeBron could make, just with the strength that it required, you know, to get the shot off. And it was absolutely a spectacular shot. Not what I truly was not expecting that. I mean, how could you? But especially just after missing the layup, you know, to be able to answer with a shot with such a degree of difficulty was truly a spectacular play.
Well, even that pass. Like, that pass had to be perfect. That the pass had to be right where LeBron could catch, dribble, and turn around and adjust and get into the space. I tweeted something that I'm not going to repeat here. That was a joke about the rumors, and I'm not going to repeat it because I don't want to go into that fully. But Kevin Love is one of the few players in that position that is making the pass that well.
Yeah, okay, we'll start here. Love's ability to make that pass is something that, of course, always gets the, you know, the attention and the buzz, and there's been, you know, TV package after TV package talking about where that came from and how that became part of his arsenal. But I can't come up off the top of my head a more important time Love has utilized that skill than right there. A lot of times that, you know, he might throw an outstanding outlet pass in the second quarter of a game and, you know, it's eye popping and, you know, a spectacular play, but just the time at which that pass came, you know, on the heels of LeBron missing that layup, it was truly all of the talk about Love's ability to make those full court passes. That was, you know, the best instance of it that I've ever seen.
Yeah, and like even that could have been the cap on the game, right? Like, this could have been the end. I mean, you're having sort of everything just sort of kind of building up to this thing where LeBron hits that shot, it goes to overtime. And like the Cavs should have really lost this game, and then LeBron James fouls out. LeBron James, for the first time since 2014, to when he was actually still with the Heat, for the fifth time in his NBA career.
Which is just remarkable with the amount of minutes that guy has logged in and the high pressure situations that he's played. It is truly a remarkable statistic, and I mean, for all the things to admire LeBron for on the basketball court, his ability to keep himself out of foul trouble, or when he even, you know, does find his way in there, to be able to weed his way through it and to not make, you know, commit dumb fouls is really impressive, and always keeps him on the floor when the game matters most. Of course, tonight he was not,
yeah,
because of that fifth foul.
Right. So like, you get, normally we've seen this all year that the Cavs have struggled without LeBron James on the floor. I don't need to cite any statistics for you listeners out there to know that the Cavs have sucked with LeBron on the bench a lot of the year. Some of that is because of Kyrie Irving having his, you know, his issues. Some of that is Kevin Love having his issues. None of that happened here. You had Kyrie Irving, who statistically was not good in this game. He's only 8 of 24 for the game, only 2 of 7 from the three-point line. 23 points for him, but 11 of those come in overtime. Kevin Love hits 2 free throws at the end of OT to win that game, to seal that game for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Kyrie Irving hits the go-ahead shot from basically the same spot he hit the game winner over Steph Curry. Like, just all, yeah, these things, like them rising to this moment, without Amon Shumpert, who hurt his ankle and didn't come back, with all these other things, with Kay Felder being just, I mean, the Cavs played Kay Felder 9 minutes tonight, and I can't even believe that his plus minus was 0, and I almost think it's because he had been playing with LeBron. Kyle Korver, for everything else that happened tonight, with Tristan Thompson scoring 22 points, like, with a career high 22 points, mind you, on 10 of 13 from the field. I mean, Tristan Thompson even hit a free throw to kind of extend this game, in a sense. Korver hits some threes, and the Cavs hunt the corners in this game.
Yeah,
like I think nuts. Everything about this game to me was just nuts, and I'm not exactly doing a good job right now, to be honest, of contextualizing this. I just can't even wrap my head around that game.
Well, I think, you know, one of the most stunning things, and you mentioned Kyrie struggles. He was 5 of 18 at one point, finishes the game 8 of 24. So, you know, hits 3 of his last final 6 shots. But I think what was so just impressive down the stretch is just the way that everyone sort of made the play that they were known for. You know, Love makes that pass, and Tristan has that back tap down the stretch to, to put the possession, and then, you know, Love goes to the free throw line and clinches it there. And Korver hits the clutch 3 in transition there. It seemed like every guy was able to make the play that is sort of associated with him, you know, with Tristan with the offensive rebound and Kyrie with the clutch shots. It was truly the epitome of a team win. You know, you look, you have 4 guys above 20 points, 2 in the 30s. You know, it was truly team basketball, and with LeBron out down the stretch, you honestly could not have asked for a better just a better team effort. And, you know, people pick each other up when they're down. Obviously, you mentioned Shumpert plays 24 minutes with, you know, suffers that ankle injury, but just guy after guy made the play when they needed. And, you know, that's why this game really, really does seem like, you know, something greater than just a regular season win in overtime. Because, you know, overtime win is an overtime win and is definitely something to help your confidence boost. But it was just the manner in which guys stepped up down the stretch that really makes this game, you know, what it is. And, you know, it's honestly hard to contextualize in some regards.
Yeah, I mean, instantly it's sort of hard to, because I think that, but I think that because it's a regular season game, because it's not a game that I think has a lot of, I mean, regular season basketball, especially with the Cavs, as far as we sort of think right now, it doesn't exactly mean like a ton. You can't put a lot of stakes into what they're doing. Like, the Wizards come into this game when have winners of 7 straight, having won 17 in a row at home in D.C., have really proven to be a good team. I mean, they're ahead of Toronto in the standings right now.
Yeah,
That might have flipped now, I think, because of the results of tonight's game, of Monday's games, but you're looking at a team that has become something more than just a middle-of-the-pack Eastern Conference team. This is a legit team. This is a team that has just beat every expectation for themselves, that has become something more than they would. I mean, and yes, they're very top-heavy. They got, I think it was like 119 of their 135 points from their starting lineup, which is just absurd. And, like, they only had, like, 6 useful players in this game, really.
They had 16 bench points, and for the record, so the Raptors did overtake them in the standings. So Wizards are sitting 4th right now. They're a half game back from Toronto, with the way the results shook out. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing too, just with the way in which the Wizards have been playing this game, 17 in a row at home, to for the Cavs to be able to go in there and win that game is a really impressive, especially just kind of, you know, they've had the tough month of January and stuff, to, you know, them being a team that's kind of, you know, treading water a little bit versus a team like the Wizards that are excelling at the moment. What is really, really important with the Cavs, especially with they have their next 3 games are against teams that are currently in the playoff standings right now. So to have this win and carry that in to those next 3 games is important for sure.
Yeah. All right. Let me ask you this, Kevin. Who out of everyone that played in this game for the Cleveland Cavaliers, and probably going to be one of the 3 guests, who is your player of the game?
Oh man.
Like, that's such a hard question, and like you could answer it in 3 ways, and literally I think it'd be a fine answer. I think like my answer, to give you time to think about this, would be LeBron, just because he did so much. I think because he hits that shot, because everything that he did, I think he gets there. Love would honestly probably be 2nd, just because he was so good. Like, this was a Kevin Love who, not, we didn't even get to this, he was 11-11 from the free throw line. 11-11 the free throw line. Really took, he took more combined free throws than LeBron and Kyrie. Like, just such a great game from him. I mean, just, and considering everything that's going on around him, and then he had this really great quote after the game about the reports, about it. It said, it's a lie. Quote, this is per Dave McMenamin at Mc10 on Twitter. This is Kevin Love post game. It's a lie. What do they say? A lie gets halfway around the world before the truth has a chance to put his pants on. Like, a great Kevin Love, just sort of debunking those quotes. And you have LeBron James calling those reports trash. Like, just absurd. And you could argue Kyrie just simply because he hit the go-ahead shot.
Well, right, and it's funny that, you know, just kind of your pecking order there with LeBron is, because I was just thinking about Kyrie's overtime and, you know, how he had struggled up to that point, like I mentioned before, 5 of 18. But he, as soon as the overtime period began, he looked like a different player. And, of course, the stats would back that up. But just visually, he was playing with a little bit of an edge. Some of the handles that he had down the stretch there against Beal were just mind-boggling. The way he just played in overtime was just a classic Kyrie Irving performance where he, you know, with LeBron going out, for the way that Kyrie stepped up, I was honestly kind of leaning toward Kyrie Irving just for the way he played down the stretch. Of course, they're not there without LeBron's ridiculous bank three-pointer, but Kyrie Irving, the ability to not let LeBron's, you know, foul out, shake him and rattle him, and for him to just, you know, hunker down there and hit those big shots that he did was, you know, truly just a remarkable performance after the way he had struggled for so long. And I mean, for him to just persevere through that and hit the three-pointer and hit that shot against Beal where he tried to get on the baseline there near the end of the game where he tried to draw the contact and he was able to, you know, settle that one in home. So you really can't go wrong, as you mentioned, but I just think the way Irving played down the stretch after how poor he had played was, you know, just really a remarkable, really remarkable effort from him.
Yeah, 100% agree with that. Let's talk about the love Melo stuff for a little bit. I mean, LeBron called this report trash, called the author of the report trash, and that's Frank Isola from the New York Daily News. So you got a lot sort of going on there with that, and I didn't really buy it just because I think everything that we sort of know about about LeBron and everything sort of has it make it seem like this is a weird leak, and I just think, like, as much as LeBron is tight with Melo, like, LeBron's too smart to think that Carmelo at this point is an upgrade over Kevin Love. Like, there's all these arguments on Twitter about if Love can play against the Warriors, can Carmelo Anthony at this point in his career actually play against the Warriors? You know what I mean? Like, I have a serious question if he can actually be on the floor in a meaningful way. And, like, Love, you want to talk about a guy who's really done a lot of really interesting work. Like, he defends, you know, defended Curry in the finals.
He defended, nice plays tonight, too. Yeah,
John Wall is one of the, if not the fastest NBA point guards. Like, the dude is an absurd athlete, and Kevin Love did a really nice job defending him in the pick and roll. Like, just a really, really nice job defending him in the pick and roll.
I think, Chris, you made a good point about just sort of LeBron's, you know, basketball acumen, and for him to realize, too, like, friendships aside, LeBron wants to win, and I think it would really be, objectively, I don't see how you could think that Carmelo Anthony, at this point in his career, and just all of Carmelo's weaknesses as a player, you know, both defensively, and, I mean, I just don't think that LeBron would look at the two players and consider that to be an upgrade, you know, especially if you want to just give them Carmelo Anthony and put him on the team. Okay, that's one thing, but to sacrifice Love and for all he's able to do, and to lose Love's rebounding would be a really tough blow. I mean, Carmelo's averaging 6 rebounds this season, which is, you know, I think he's right around 6 for his career. So to swap Carmelo for a guy who rebounds like Love, it doesn't make too much sense. And I think that's even what makes Love's games tonight so impressive too, was, you know, just kind of in the face of all these things flying around, for him to really prove his worth. And Love, or Lou, quipped in the post game, like, yeah, we're trading him tonight, when he was asked. So I think that really, if there was any doubt about the, you know, the credence that should be given to Isola's report today, I think Love's performance tonight put the kibosh on those for good.
Yeah, I hope so. I just don't think there's a really workable deal for those. Like, I just don't think Carmelo, even, like, the other deals that could be out there. I know you see, like, Tristan Thompson's salary could be something that works. You could do Shump and JR. The Knicks are
give them back. Here you go, New York.
Yeah, of all the teams that would do that, like, the Knicks, even with a lot of their issues in terms of having a competent front office. Like, Phil Jackson, like, hated J.R. Smith and Amon Shumpert. Like, he wanted them out. He basically just gifted them to the Cavs in a lot of ways. So, That's just not going to happen. I just think like you get into a lot of issues with Melo, and I it's just to me it's like if he, I think he certainly could end up somewhere. Like I think the Clippers would be something that would totally happen. I just don't see him actually coming to the Cavs in any workable scenario.
Yeah, and I guess to beyond just the you know the if we're just going to pretend that you know cap and stuff like that is non-existent, some of the non Kevin Love pieces that the Cavs would have to give up would be JR and Shump, and instead it just there's no way that the Knicks would want those two guys back. There's you know LeBron told the famous story now you're going to throw in JR. He said when you know the deal was proposed it just doesn't seem like there's you know the Cavs have the pieces outside of Love to even make the deal work to begin with. So I while there still might be some you know some things floating out there on the dark corners of the internet in the next couple of days, I do think that Love's performance tonight was probably the denouement for those in the meantime. That there's just the players are just too different. Love does enough things well. His rebounding is just the thing that I think would be where the Cavs would really miss him. Again, obviously his three-point shooting and some of his other things, but just to have him rebounding and as more of a solid power forward, where I mean Carmelo would it just doesn't fit, and LeBron recognizes that, friendships aside. So I don't think Carmelo could end up in Los Angeles, but I don't think he'll be wearing wine and gold this season for sure.
Yeah, I pretty doubt that. So let me ask you this, and we'll let you get out of here. Amon Shumpert hurts his ankle. Kyle Korver's played pretty well. Kyle Korver, I think, functions a lot better with the starters. Let's say Amon Shumpert doesn't play on Wednesday, which seems kind of likely considering Jason Lloyd tweeted that he was in a boot after the game. There's frankly not a reason to really rush him back unless he's good to go. Really, this play you could see his ankle. He was chasing Bradley Beal at the top of the key and just looked like he bucked his ankle and just kind of went down. Do you think Korver should be the starting two guard moving forward?
I think so.
I'm pretty fully in that camp after tonight.
Yeah, I think you're right just with the way that he functions with the starters. And, I mean, especially if Shump is out, I would say that right now I would definitely like to see, even if Shump, let's say he's, you know, going to give it a go on Wednesday, he clearly wouldn't be 100% based on Lloyd's report. I would like to see Korver get an extended run with the starters, whether it be, you know, against Indiana and then Denver's up next. Mm-hmm. After that, so I would like to see him in there for a couple games. I can see why, when they put Shump in there after JR went down, but I do think you know the Cavs still just trying to you know figure out these pieces after coming off the rough January. I think it's worth the shot. I mean I don't think that you can object to it in that sense. That I think it's worth putting in Korver, seeing what he can contribute, you know, with the starters. And I think Shump's injury is a really good excuse to try that out. So I would like to see what he's good. And obviously, you know, excellent team defender too. So it's not like you don't have any concerns there, you know, as being a big step back defensively.
Yeah, I mean, Shump's especially because Shump is overrated defensively. I mean, he is fine, but he's not. I wouldn't like quantify Shump as like a good defender to be. At this point with him, he's just not like like a lockdown defender in the way that people think he is.
Right, and absolutely, he's certainly not the one-on-one defender. And you know, Korver is a very you know a very good team defender for you know for a guy that is a, you know at his age and with you know kind of just being known for just being a sharpshooter. So he's a very good team defender. So I don't really think you're losing much in that department. So I definitely would like to see Korver, you know, get his chance with the, you know, with the ones and see what he can kind of do moving forward and see if that's something that they, you know, they like throughout the, you know, rest of the regular season and till JR comes back and, you know, depending on what they want to do there too. But I think he, you know, he proved it tonight that he's, you know, should be in there for at least against the Pacers on Wednesday.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think that's sort of the smart play with his health and kind of everything you have going on there. All right, Kevin, last thing we're going to do here, just the thing you're going to remember most about this game, just insanity of it. And if you're going to rank this on a scale of LeBron, of flopping LeBron to LeBron blocking Iguodala in the finals. Like, what's your LeBron rating on this game?
Oh man, all right. So I think the thing that I'll remember most, it was the duality of the LeBron missing that layup, one of the easiest shots, and then for the degree of difficulty for that three. So I'll just kind of remember those plays in succession and just the crazy the crazy difference between the two. So that will be the most memorable thing for me. And ranking that on the scale, ooh, man.
Nothing can be equal to the Iguodala block.
No, it can't be equal to the block, but I would say if you gave a regular season scale, this is certainly up there, on the Farns, and just is so memorable. That's the thing too. I'm sure if I sat down and, combed through some other things, I might, recall those plays, but just the memorable nature of that shot. So it's certainly one of the better performances from LeBron in the regular season that I can recall. And the 17th assist too was quite, I never really even thought about what his career high assists were until that flashed up on the screen. Obviously I knew it was somewhere in the teens, but, that was just a remarkable performance there too. He had that pass early in the game where he threw that bullet to the corner. So many plays from him tonight. So this is definitely one of the better regular season performances I can recall from him in recent memory.
Yeah, it's just great. You look ahead to Wednesday's game, I think you're playing a good Indiana team. You're playing a team that has Paul George, and I think you could see some guys rest. I mean, you're heading into the second game of a four-game road trip. You have him on Shumpert injured. Yeah, you're going to be thin, but I think you might see some Jordy McRae. You might see some more Kay Felder. I think you're coming into a back-to-back. I mean, look, I know LeBron James, like I'm saying, he only played 42 minutes tonight, but look, got to get him some rest. I think resting him Wednesday, considering you're playing on national TV Thursday, considering it's Russell Westbrook and all this stuff, I think resting him Wednesday might make some sense. But we'll see. I mean, we'll see if any of those guys rest. I think some of them at least deserve it. I think you'll see a lot of guys still play, but Wednesday might be a day where even if LeBron plays, I think you might need to see some Liggins and McRae minutes and more of the 9 minutes of Kay Felder, however hard that might be to watch. Like, I think you might need to see it. But Kevin, thank you so much for coming on. And this was like something I literally texted you as you were texting about this game, and various other kind of things. But where if people want to find you on Twitter, where can they find you?
You can follow me at Kevin_Stank. You'll see a nice mixture of Ohio State sports, NBA sports, just college basketball in general. I contribute to NCAA.com there, so you can find me at Kevin_Stank for a grab bag of topics on Twitter.
Yeah, and he official friend of the pod, an official straight shooter.
Straight shooter,
100% a straight shooter. He brings the brunch, some brunch flavor to this podcast as well to mix everything in. If you get that reference, you're the greatest. If you get what I'm going for there, you're literally the greatest. But this show isn't even done today. So next up, we're going to take a quick little intermission here. Justin Rowan for Fear the Sword. Have a segment with him on Tristan Thompson on the Cavs' depth, because I think we didn't really hit on that enough on Monday's mailbag show. So hope you guys enjoy that. We'll be back tomorrow to preview Cavs Pacers a little bit, talk some other stuff. And we'll talk to you guys.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And now I'm joined by Justin Rowan from Fear the Sword, Press Basketball, and Hoops Habit. Justin, how's it going?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me back. I'm fighting a little bit of a cold, but this will be my flu game.
Yeah, this is the podcast flu game. We all have those. It's part of the real hard struggle of podcasting, because it's just such a hard gig.
It's part of the grind, and in 20 years, I'm going to be complaining about how other podcasters, they take too many nights off, they rest, and they're just not as good as we were. But for now, the struggle begins, I guess.
Yeah, those jump shooting podcasters of the future gotta chill. Like, they gotta, stay in their lane. But anyway, we're here today to talk about Tristan Thompson. Justin wrote a really good piece over at Fear the Sword about Tristan. You should check out. It is in the description of this podcast, so you can check it out there. But Justin, let's start with this. I think just if even if you look at statistically and you look at just the eye test, Tristan Thompson's role to me feels different this year, especially compared to the last 2 years. It's really hard to compare what he had to do when he was in his first couple years because of the makeup of the team, but the last couple years he's been a starter and off the bench. This year he's the full-time starting center. How do you think his role is different, and how do you think he's responded to that change?
In some ways, the role hasn't changed too much because the total minutes per game, there's not too much of a change from there. It's just kind of how he's being deployed. In some ways, I almost prefer his role in the past where he was playing the bulk of the fourth quarter, whereas now I think the Cavs and Tyronn Lue are experimenting a little more with offense to close out those final minutes of games, and you're seeing Kyle Korver and even Channing Frye get the call in those situations. But overall, I think it's largely the same role. He's kind of improved within the margins of what he did before. Better awareness offensively. You see him move the ball. He's not forcing things under the basket. He's kicking it out in the pick and roll. He's not just looking to score. He's aware of the other guys on the court and makes the right play often. So while a lot of that stuff is subtle and doesn't jump out to you on the box score, I think it's been a dramatic improvement, and that's not even touching on how much he's grown defensively this year.
Yeah, I think the way you described it, it's more of a when you see Tristan Thompson is different. I think where they do miss him in the old compared to where he was doing the last 2 years is he was really, really useful playing with other bench guys because I think he filled in a lot of gaps there. And I think when you see Channing Frye playing backup center minutes, you know, especially in the second quarter when LeBron last year would have those bench lineups with Tristan in there, I think you do see him miss there. But as a starting center, I think you're right. I think he's been really good. I think as much as, like, people on Twitter get really mad about his contract, what he, like, just come on. Like, guys, like, it's done. Like, just let it go. What he does for the Cavs, it's especially valuable to the Cavs. Like, the Cavs don't need a center who is going to score a lot. They don't need a center who is going to need the ball a lot. They don't need a center who is just functions as more than a fifth option offensive player. Like, they need a guy who rebounds, who can switch in the pick and roll, who can play really smart, and can take advantage of opportunities when he gets them. That's what Tristan Thompson is. And I think you maybe would like him to be more of a traditional rim protector. Like, I think an ideal world, you would have a guy next to Kevin Love who is swatting shots all the time. But Tristan Thompson, for not being a guy who is particularly long, not particularly not going to jump up and swat shots, like, he's a good rim protector, and he's gotten better this year, as you've noted.
Yeah, the percentages certainly are better. I don't think he's ever going to be a guy that makes teams think twice about going to the paint. There's not that intimidation factor. But the kind of effectiveness of his rim protection is right up there with what you would want at that position. So I think that's about as good as you could reasonably hope for. As always, there's room to improve in the margins, as he has basically every year in his career. But defensively, I don't think there's a whole lot more you would want from Thompson for this roster. The contract stuff is still funny to me. He's, I believe, the 55th highest paid player in the league, and after another round of these new contracts kick in, he's going to be even lower. He's 25 years old, locked up until 2020. It's funny to me that he's kind of the poster boy for a bad contract. It kind of does remind me, I forget who brought this up to me on Twitter, but it reminds me of Avery Bradley when he first signed that deal, and everyone was like, oh, how could you sign that for Avery Bradley? But then as the environment changes and what guys are worth slowly increases, that's a value deal for the Celtics. And if Thompson isn't already a value deal, I think in the next 2-3 years, we're going to see it being below market value. When you see guys like Bismack Biyombo get paid more, Alan Crabb, Evan Turner, Joakim Noah, like there's tons of guys that are much lesser players than Thompson, and are getting paid more. So I don't think that's really a huge concern. And when you consider the fact that even if he would have signed for $2 million a year, it wouldn't really change the Cavs' flexibility in terms of who they can sign in free agency. So I don't think it's something that people should be too concerned about.
Yeah, it's like, look, like when you're the Cavs, you're going to pay him, and it's you were not going to ever get Tristan Thompson a replacement with your cap issues, like, right? Like, you had to get a guy that was under your control, unless you flip Tristan Thompson, which wasn't really going to happen considering his restricted free agent status and all those different aspects. Let's look at the specifics here. Where do you think he's most improved this year? Because for me, I think it's the two things that he has hinted at that I think he's most improved at is rim protection, especially when he's been a mobile rim protector. He's not great at being a vertical, a la old school Roy Hibbert rim protector, but he's really good at kind of using his body to get good angles and to get guys when they're running. And he can swat shots that way. I think he's also become a more willing passer. Like, he's become willing to kick it out to the corner when he gets trapped inside or there's a double inside instead of trying to dunk, because it's for frankly, if Kyrie Irving's in the corner or if Kyle Korver is in the corner or if Kevin Love is in the corner, I'd rather him pass it out than go to the free throw line.
Right, absolutely. I think the two biggest areas of improvement, like the pick and roll defense and switching onto wings, that's always been there. The biggest improvement to me is his impact on the interior. I think he's just playing smarter defense. He's really affecting shots, not only just at the rim, but in the paint in general. I think he's had a legitimate presence for the Cavs inside. And then, as you kind of alluded to, the passing is the other big one for me. That was something that I really wanted to see him improve, and that's what makes a lot of these elite offenses so dangerous. You see Golden State with Draymond Green, his ability to find guys in the pick and roll exceeds his threat as a scoring threat in the pick and roll. Thompson obviously is always going to be a threat in lob situations, but him finding guys and making the right play, and it doesn't always result in an assist. Like, especially with the way the Cavs move the ball, it might be a second or third pass that results in the shot, but just the way that him as a threat in the pick and roll causes the defense to collapse, that creates good opportunities for other guys once that ball is swung. At the very least, the defense is compromised and the Cavs can run something on the weak side. So I think it's had a really big effect. And when you look at all the on-off numbers, you look at the lineup data, most of the Cavs' most effective lineups are once again with Thompson. And the defensive impact he's had this season has been considerable.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the lineup data, let's look at the three-man combos. If you look at when he's played with two other members of the Big Three, all of those lineups are over 10 points better per 100 possessions when they're on the floor together. Like, he is complementing those guys perfectly. He fills in the gaps where he needs to. And I think, like, the lob stuff, I think, is particularly important, because I think I have a critique of Tristan and what he is as an offensive player, I do think a lot of it comes down to his finishing. Like, it's not like he's not a particularly powerful finisher. Like, he's not going to rise up and overwhelm you. He's not a particularly a crafty finisher, for lack of a better way to phrase. Like, he's not going to ever have these very sweeping layups. And you'd like him to get better there, but when he does get the right opportunities, like, he's very good at capitalizing. When it's not like something that's overly complicated or overly blocked and overly defended, he does really well in the situations. That's really all you need of him.
Right, absolutely. And another important thing with Thompson, and part of why I think he is so valuable, is just he understands his role. And I think guys, especially at 25 years old, they want to make a name for themselves, and they want to show that they can make an impact. But Thompson's willing to make that sacrifice. He's willing to accept a lesser role. And in some games, he is asked to do more offensively, and you do see bigger outings from him, and you see him more involved. But you get that consistent effort from him from a night-in, night-out basis, and he's not trying to do things that he can't do. That was one of the biggest problems with Amon Shumpert last year, was he would kind of go rogue too many times. He wasn't predictable. And when you have three guys that can really create for themselves, create for others, and are really offensive hubs for the Cavaliers, having guys that are predictable, that you know exactly what they're going to do, it makes their lives a lot easier. You know where Thompson's going to be. You know the chemistry he's developed with LeBron, and even the chemistry he has with Kyrie. you see so many of these smart plays. They find him moving off ball for easy baskets. That's the type of stuff that you need to have if you want to have a successful offense. Really, I do think his kind of off-ball movement and awareness of gaps and finding those passing lanes and getting into them is one of the underrated offensive traits that he does have.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right on that. Is there anywhere specific you think he could get better? Like, or you'd at least like to see him get better?
Well, we got to start at the free throw line, right?
Yeah, I mean that's like the thing, right? Like, I mean, he's not... Like I've never thought his motion is particularly terrible, you know, but he's shooting 50% from the free throw line this year, which is extraordinarily bad considering he was, I mean, he's never been a good free throw shooter, but he was above 60% last year. He was almost at 70%, yeah, and when he was 22 years old, he was almost at 70%.
Exactly, and I thought it was just going to continue in that direction, and I don't know necessarily what has caused it. I kind of expect it to correct itself a little bit because he's not as bad as he's been this year. But I really do think with his work ethic and his ability that he's shown in the past to shoot free throws, I think he can at least become a respectable free throw shooter. So that would be somewhere that I'd really like to see him grow. There's other aspects of his game that I've seen in international play and stuff like that, that while it'd be nice to see him kind of expand his game, like you just really don't want him taking like a free throw line jumper and stuff like that when there are better options out there. Maybe as LeBron ages and the makeup of this team changes, you start to have Tristan do a little more, maybe with the second unit, kind of an event, a gradual build up of the offensive repertoire, the same way that we saw with Anderson Varejao. In a lot of ways, I kind of feel like their careers with the Cavaliers have kind of gone the same way, as a goofy hustle play guy that just gradually shows more and more development on both ends. And I do think there's kind of a possibility for that pick and pop game. But just his ability to finish in the pick and roll, I think that's always going to be one of the focal points of the sets they run for him. But as I said, as the makeup of this team changes, I do think there is room for him to at least assume some of that responsibility.
Yeah, it's interesting because if you look at like this year's shooting numbers, he still has a true shooting percentage, which if you don't know, it's field goal percentage plus free throw percentage. It's still significantly above the year he shot almost 70% from the free throw line. Like he's at 57.4% as we record this. He was at about 53% back when he was 22. So like he's overall a better offensive player. By like if you look at that metric, you look at his
He gets to the line like fewer than two times a game, so that's not going to impact his true shooting percentage. Like a small fluctuation in that percentage is maybe an extra point every one or two games, right?
Yeah.
But I still think it'd be nice to see improvement there, because otherwise you start getting into that Haka situation where teams try to take him off the floor in the playoffs, and he's such an important part that I think you want to prevent that if you can, and him being a more confident and consistent free throw shooter would eliminate that possibility.
Yeah, 100%, especially because he is a playable big against smaller lineups. Like, you need him in a lot of ways on the floor, and if teams hack him, it gets harder to play him because it takes the ball out of Kyrie and LeBron's hands. The craziest thing about Thompson's career to me in some ways is that, so if you look at his usage rates, he started his career in 2011-2012. That was the highest usage rate of his career. and then he goes all the way down to when they win the title. That was the lowest today, and then this year he's even below last year. He's at 11.1% usage rate. Like it's such a reverse of what you'd expect out of a young guy. Right? Like you usually think you inch up to something that big. Like of course, those Cavs teams when he started were not good.
Kyrie would miss like a third of the year, and he'd be the only NBA player, and he was a project big.
Yeah,
that's why I remember kind of caping him for a minute during those times, being like, okay, I understand he's not good, but he's the only NBA player out there. You don't have a point guard making things easier for him when Kyrie was out. It just wasn't the right role for him. And this was the type of situation that he always needed to be in.
Yeah, 100% agree. It just he's a guy that does he have a little bit more potential? Yeah, I think like Tristan Thompson has potential to grow into something more. But he is probably always going to be best served as a high-level role player. Like, that is what he is. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, every team needs high-level role players. The NBA, titles are won by in large part by having better role players in certain positions. Like, that you just need guys that can stay on the floor. Like, yes, like, you need LeBron James. Like, and Tristan Thompson's not going to block Andre Iguodala. He's not going to hit that three over Steph Curry. But there's so many little things that you need from guys like that that kind of separate you from other teams that have other stars. Like the Clippers, for all the star power they've had the past couple years, and yes, you can say the health issues, one of the reasons it feels like they always flame out is because they just don't have enough good players. Like, it's just a the war and the war.
And that's deep. That's what killed the Oklahoma City Thunder too. They didn't have any supporting players around their three or four guys.
I mean, when you can get very top heavy, and that certainly gets you somewhere. But you need guys like Tristan Thompson to develop. Like, it's pretty crazy, kind of considering the Cavs have had a lot of draft issues. Let's say over the past 10 years or so, considering some of the guys they drafted post LeBron, especially. But Tristan Thompson and Kyrie Irving came from the same draft. You hit both those picks. I'm not a fan of redrafting because it takes away all the context of the picks. Like, you got two players on your championship team in 1 year. That's huge.
Yeah, it is huge. And when you look at the top 10, the only player that I'd really take over Tristan Thompson would be Kemba Walker, but that would be redundant with Kyrie. But I'd take him over. Well, you look at the top four picks, you got Derek Williams and Enes Kanter. Tristan's obviously a much better fit and has a better overall impact than Kanter. I'd take him over Valanciunas, Biombo, Jimmer Fredette, like all the guys that went top 10 in that draft. And while it was kind of stacked with later steals, based off the information that was available at that time, they came out pretty good there.
Yeah, like you hit those two picks. And like I love the quote that Tristan had from over the weekend. Like, there's all that talk about him being overpaid, and then he got asked about it, and he was like, LeBron's not my agent. I love that.
I think there's something that comes with that number 13 jersey, because both Delonte and Tristan have been the two guys that can consistently yell at LeBron on the court. Like, both got yelled at by LeBron. If you play with LeBron, you're going to get yelled at by him. But LeBron seems to allow Tristan to yell at him every now and then, and it's probably a result of their friendship that dates back to Tristan being in high school. But it's funny, and I think going back to the draft stuff before we move on, I think it's important to note too that just with how dysfunctional the Cavs organization was, how little support they had, the Cavs really drafted two high character and driven players. A situation like that, we see it routinely ruin other prospects. And I think if Tristan and Kyrie didn't have the work ethics that they have just naturally and the character to really push themselves in a tanking situation, I don't think they'd be anywhere near ready to contribute at the ages that they have on a championship level team. And for Tristan to accept his role, even though on those teams he was asked to do more than he is now and he was a bigger part, I think really does kind of speak to his character.
Yeah, and also Mike Miller, for reference, wore number 13 with the Miami Heat when LeBron was there. It's a thing.
It's officially a thing.
Yeah, we got to come up with like a good – I think it should be the Delonte West theory. Like, I'm here for that because Delonte forever.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, Delonte forever and ever. Okay, I'm going to ask you one more thing about Tristan, then we'll move on. And it's just sort of a yes or no question. Does Tristan Thompson ever make an All-Star game?
No.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think it matters. I just kind of – like, the Cavs every year make a slight little push for him to get All-Star votes. And I always, like, wonder if, like, 1 year, if he's dating Chloe, if he got, like, a bunch of retweets from Chloe, because Chloe did campaign for him. I've always wondered if, like, that could get him enough votes, just randomly 1 year.
it seems possible. I don't think he'll – I don't think he has the Canadian backing that other – players have kind of enjoyed. Like, I don't think he gets the same level of votes from as Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan supporters, or even Andrew Wiggins from up here. But I can't see him being an All-Star. I always kind of thought of him as, like, and it's funny to say this because we're talking about a Hall of Fame guy, but like a polite Dennis Rodman. Like, he's just going to always do those little things, and how he's going to be measured is going to be the impact that he's had on playoff teams and how many series he's changed with all the little things that he does. And I think at the end of the day, if he's just a winning player on these winning teams, that's going to be more than enough for him.
Yeah, 100% agree. So the other thing I just wanted that we're going to talk to Justin about is some of the Cavs' recent roster construction. I think there's been a not quite fleshed out debate on Twitter, because why would, you know, of course Twitter doesn't have a totally fleshed out debate all the time. But, you know, whatever. But, I mean, early morning tweet storms, of course, you know, that's the way to communicate now. I'm just saying. But, of course, you know, get up, watch the cable TV and tweet. But if we look at how the Cavs have built their roster, how they've got to the point, I think I tweeted stuff that I think I need to, like, offer context to you. So, like, I think there's been this thing because of the Briante Weber going to the Warriors thing on a 10-day deal that the Cavs, like, haven't, you know, it was, like, a critique from some people, then the defense of the other. And I think there's two sides to this. One, I think, like, if you want to say, like, Briante Weber isn't the answer, I think that's a very reasonable argument. And I think if you want to make the argument that 24-year-olds aren't necessarily up to playing for a title right away, like, that's fine too. I think where I kind of have a critique is that, like, you can have the James Jones roster spot. You can have, I think one of those is fine. I think, like, when you get to signing Birdman, and then you get, like, a couple years ago, you got the signing Sean Marion and Mike Miller. Like, I think when you lean so heavy old, I think you sort of kind of set yourself up to be where the Cavs are at now. I'm not saying that younger guys are necessarily the perfect answer, and I think there's certainly a little bit more inherent risk with signing a guy. And I think, you know, for the Cavs, you know, it's telling that if you don't get a guy like Quinn Cook, and you get a guy, you don't sign a guy like Brent Weber, like, that, I can understand that, because you don't want to trust the young guy. And if LeBron doesn't trust that guy, that's paramount, maybe above everything else. I do think there is some prudence to getting younger guys and trying to develop them, because I think you have, you have the ability that they might fail. And yes, the veteran guys have been through the ringer before. They've played in those moments before, especially if it's guys LeBron knows. At the same time, they have a potential to grow into things more than the older guys are going to provide. I think you need to kind of balance those two realities.
Yeah, for sure. And the funny thing about Weber signing, I kind of feel like the Warriors are now almost getting, like, the Spurs-like treatment, that any guy they sign is automatically deemed as genius.
Yeah, I don't disagree I think with that it's at all. I 100% kind of feel that way.
I think it's important to note that last season, Weber was part of a D-League championship team there, but the lead point guard, or at least the primary initiator of their offense and the defensive player of the year for the D-League, was also on his team, and that was DeAndre Liggins. So I think freaking out over a portion of a D-League season for Briante Weber, who's now taken on a bigger role because Liggins has signed with the Cavs, it just seems kind of funny to me that the Liggins signing doesn't get heralded the same way, even though he shot better, he averaged more assists, and was defensive player of the year. And then all of a sudden, Weber, whose stats get inflated by taking over for Liggins, all of a sudden it's this genius signing for the Warriors. I just don't think that the role that the Cavs need somebody to fill is going to be filled by an inexperienced guy that's bounced around the league. I think odds are that Weber doesn't last on the Warriors roster beyond February. And if he does, good for him. But any minute that he's playing over Steph Curry or Sean Livingston in a potential series would be a win for the Cavs.
I 100% agree. Like, I think the thing with Weber that I sort of like that the Warriors do with that is they're trying to get some younger depth. And, like, they get, like, is James McAdoo a perfect player? No. Like, is Patrick McCaw a perfect player? No. But, like, they've had the assets and they've got those guys. Of course, the difference between the Cavs and the Warriors is the Warriors had sort of built this over time, and they hit on a lot of stuff. The Cavs threw themselves into title contending because they got LeBron James. Like, and they're sort of things that come with getting LeBron that mean you're going to try to get guys whoever you can. And if that means trading draft picks, that's sort of the price you pay.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I'm definitely with you on the theory. I just am not with anybody that says Weber was the answer.
Yeah, I think the reason that I think I get a little bit I have a little bit of an issue with, like, the Weber thing in terms of a more big picture thing and not, like, at this moment, is that I understand trading assets and I understand doing that to get guys if you're the Cavs. Like, I can, the justification is clear. It's not like they pull the Kings or something like that, right? Like, it's like I think David Griffin obviously is a very good general manager. I wonder if it's like, okay, is there really that big of a difference between what Kay Felder is and what Briante Weber is that you had to pay to draft Kay Felder? You know what I mean? It's just like, you're worried about money and you're worried about, and you say you lost $40 million and that's the report and that, you know, there's Crane's Cleveland saying they lost more than $40 million and you're worried about the tax, and why did you spend $2.4 million on Kay Felder? Like, I just have, like, these issues with, like, if you're going to do something and you're worried about the money to sign guys now, then why did you, like, spend money to get a younger guy when you probably could have got a guy of similar value, of similar skill, that's actually a bigger, like, it isn't 5'9 and small, that you could have gotten at, a lower price without having to pay to pick him. I think there's just, like, these issues with that part of how the Cavs have built.
Yeah, yeah. It is also important to note that they got screwed over on Media Day by Mo Williams changing his mind and retiring.
That was, like, being at Media Day for that, and then David Griffin just kind of looking, you know, David Griffin has, like, sort of, like, the same expression, I feel like, every time I see him talk. You could just tell he was, like, a little bit pissed off about this. Like, you could just, like, you know, and that's understandable because there was every indication that he was coming back. And, of course, you could debate, is giving Mo Williams that second year of his contract, was that actually a smart idea? But, like, you know, you do get
I think the plan was always to get a buyout guy, and then two things happened. Mo Williams ended up basically backing out and essentially retiring. And then when J.R. Smith got hurt, it inevitably forced Iman Shumpert into that starting role, even though that was delayed. And Shumpert with those bench lineups really did work well, and he was a good backup point guard, at least for the time being. But the time that they thought that they had, they thought they had borrowed time to wait until buyouts and to get somebody experienced, all of a sudden went away in a hurry with Mo Williams retiring and J.R. Smith getting hurt. All their kind of contingency plans went down the drain, and that put them in a bad situation. So I definitely agree with you with the criticisms. I think they still believe in Kay Felder's long-term potential, and they wanted to get a good prospect that they felt was available later than they expected him to be available. But in terms of guys that could actually contribute this year, they kind of neglected that position. And you can argue that maybe they had these contingency plans in place and things went wrong, but the fact still remains that there wasn't that solid option there, and they didn't do much to address that.
Yeah. It's going to be very interesting to see how the Cavs approach their roster next year when they have the two extra roster spots and have the two-way contracts. And I'm very curious to, I don't know this yet. I don't know if I've seen this reported anywhere. So if anyone out there knows this, what I'm about to ask, tweet me and let me know. I really wonder if, I don't know if the two-way contracts are taxed when the guy is in the D-League because they're technically still on the roster. Like, I wonder if that still counts as tax. Because then I kind of think it's like less, it's harder to justify than not signing guys if you're not paying tax and you develop. Like, you can at least control the labor costs that way too.
Yeah, for sure.
It's all about labor control cost, honestly. All right, Justin, we're going to wrap it up on this last question. Out of everybody the Cleveland Cavaliers have been linked to in the past 2 weeks, from Jose Calderon to Bogut to Deron Williams to the guys they tried out, is there one or two guys to you that stand out from the rest of the pack?
Man, that's tough because so many of those guys have question marks with health and stuff. I think theoretically, if we're assuming full health, out of the point guard options, I really do like Mario Chalmers just because he can play defense. He's not a bad three-point shooter. Darren Williams, if he were to be bought out, I'd be all over that. Although I think with Dallas's recent success and the way he's kind of played at times, they'll either get something in a trade or they're going to kind of stand pat. So Lance Stephenson, for his ability to switch on to multiple positions, really stands out to me. Andrew Bogut as depth would kind of be nice coming off the bench, and I'm sure he's got a little bit of a grudge against the Warriors, and there's potential that he could get Draymond suspended for a game, so that's also appealing. So if you could get Stephenson and Bogut, I think you're guaranteed at least one Draymond suspension. So those guys would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think the move probably ends up having to be you get rid of Birdman's salary in some way. I think it's sort of inevitable, and I kind of find it hard to believe that they wouldn't find a way to do that. If we're looking at the guys, I think there's four guys that I really am intrigued by. I don't think Deron Williams is reasonable. I just don't think he's going to actually get bought out. So I kind of don't really consider him as much. I think he'd be a great fit. I just don't think he's getting bought out. Bogut, if he gets bought out, would be a very nice player because you get that fourth big. You get a guy who can protect the rim, still is a good passer. I wonder about the locker room fit a little bit with him. But I think basketball-wise, he makes sense. I think I do like Mario Chalmers. I've talked about on the show a lot. I do like Jameer Nelson as well. Matt Moore and Adam Mares have convinced me that he could be useful. I wasn't really sure, but I'm here for it. And I do think Lance, as crazy as it sounds, if he's healthy, if he's willing to kind of be the Lance we saw with the Grizzlies last year and for bits with the Pelicans this year, could be a really useful player, and he can switch. Like, the shooting thing with him is an issue, but he can switch against the Warriors, and that is so, so valuable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm with you there. I think his ability to switch is really, really huge. And if Amon Shumpert is legitimately a three-point threat, I think there's now space for Stephenson to kind of be that Shumpert. And we've, when he was at his best, he was a triple-double threat. He moved the ball, and he did well in a winning situation. So I think you'd kind of hope that would be there, and he'd be humbled by the way his career has gone to this point and by the injuries he's had to deal with and stuff like that, and would be willing to really play within that system.
Yeah. It'd be very interesting also to just see him with the Cavs in that locker room, just with LeBron, considering their history, not even just the blowing incident, but the him egging him on when he was on the bench the year before, and just kind of how he would fit in that locker room. I think it'd be pretty interesting because the Cavs locker room is just a very interesting place. Like, it's not it's just like a very interesting mix of personalities. LeBron and has his own thing, and everyone I think gets along a lot better than they used to. It's just like a very interesting group of guys all thrown together. Like, can you imagine JR and Lance in the same locker room?
Oh, that'd be lit.
Yeah, like JR, Lance and Shump in the same locker room with Channing and Richard Jefferson goofing around. LeBron kind of scolding everyone like the dad. Kyle Korver sitting there like, what happened? Like, why am I here? And James Jones is
and
kind of
Kyrie
being, like,
being a little loner in the corner.
Well, Kyrie and Shump are next to each other, and they always like talk and kind of like, as Shump, Kyrie always like looks at Shump a little bit when Shump like gets to leave because he's Shump and he doesn't like really need to stay quite as long as Kyrie for media stuff typically. And Kyrie kind of just, Shump just kind of just like, all right, man, it kind of just like sneaks out a little bit. And Kyrie's just kind of sitting there like, all right, I guess I'm here. If anyone is actually like in the corner, it's actually Kevin Love, like coincidentally, is actually the guy that's like in the quote unquote corner of the locker room, although he's not really like isolated from anybody.
Right.
Yeah. LeBron's actually the guy who takes because it's LeBron that's like takes the longest for everything. It's pretty funny. Everyone's just kind of like, yeah, okay, most everyone can be gone, and you're like waiting on LeBron James. And as he's putting his hat on, like the first time I had locker room this year, he's literally looking at DeAndre Liggins, making fun of him for taking a meal off the table and getting a pop or something because he hadn't played at all. And it's like, did you even like do anything? Like, just kind of teasing him about actually like eating after the game because he didn't do anything. It's great. Justin, thank you so much for coming on. If people aren't already following your tweets and your writing, where can they find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at Cavs Canada. Just take the Canada, slap a Cavs in there. You can obviously find me on Fear the Sword as well as Hoops Habit and Press Basketball. I do weekly columns there, so check me out there. And if you can't remember all that, just tweet at me and I'll be more than happy to share whatever I've been working on lately.
Yeah, make sure you go read Justin's stuff, check out all our stuff at Fear the Sword, and we'll be back again tomorrow with another episode of Lockdown Cavs. For Chris, for Justin, talk to you tomorrow.
Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.